Welcome to McGuire on Wrestling.
What do you guys want to talk about?
Let's give the people what they want. Professional wrestling.
With Mike McGuire.
The happiest Canadian camper in the world.
Tell me when I'm telling lies.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hello and welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here. Week number 5. Again, the show continues to see some amazing growth. I was just in Calgary, actually, and this week the show is on the road from the return of the Wrestle Wagon. Yeah, I'm doing the show on the road this week and had some great talks, had some great meetings with some friends and some people that are going to be on a part of this network very soon. You're going to be getting some more content, and it's always going to be free, and it's always going to be about wrestling. So if that's what you're here for, buckle in, because it's a very busy wrestling weekend. It started on Friday with Impact Wrestling, and it continues all the way through to tonight with AEW's Double or Nothing. There's been some great preview shows out there. There will be some great recap shows out there. But we are going to talk about kind of the stuff in between this week. And I have a very special guest joining me. Dave Meltzer is in Vegas. He is actually at Double or Nothing tonight. So I've leaned on a colleague of his. And that is Josh Nason from the Wrestling Observer. He's an editor and contributor there. Great writer. Just had his first article posted on SI.com. We'll talk about that coming up. But Josh and I delve deep into some of the side stories of wrestling that are going on in the business around all these events. This week, WWE has their first World Heavyweight Champion. This time, was this the right person to put the belt on? And where do we go with the new WHC? Night of Champions is the latest WWE show to take place in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Are fans still feeling the same way they did a few years ago about WWE going to Saudi? Is AEW suffering a comp ticket problem? The Hitman gets another well-deserved accolade, and Claudio is finally headed to New Japan. Before we get into this incredible conversation with Josh Nason, let's take a look at some of the biggest stories.
You want to hear the breaking news?
This Tuesday marks the premiere of Season 4 of Vice TV's Dark Side of the Ring. And this season delves deep into some of the more controversial stories in the history of pro wrestling once again, including subjects Chris Candido and Tammy Sitch, the career of Magnum TA, Abdullah the Butcher, Marty Jannetty, Bam Bam Bigelow, Adrian Adonis, the saga of Doink the Clown, the Junkyard Dog. For WCW fans, you might remember Bash at the Beach 2000 and all the mayhem that happened there. And the season will wrap up with a feature on the Graham family. Season 4 premieres May 30th, 10 p.m. on Vice TV in Canada. You can also find it on Bell Media's Crave subscription service. This past Friday, Bret the Hitman Hart was inducted into Canada's Walk of Fame. Now, the Walk of Fame, based in Toronto, has actually been around for about 25 years and has inducted about 200 Canadians since its inception. Now, the Hitman was actually inducted into the Walk of Fame in 2021. However, due to COVID-19, the unveiling of his plaque didn't happen until this year. Now, Bret joins an amazing list of Canadians who have done great things, including James Collip, the inventor of insulin for diabetic use, Keanu Reeves, R&B singer Julie Black, and many others. You can find Bret's plaque as part of the Canada's Walk of Fame in downtown Toronto and around the Rogers Centre. Well, Tony Khan took to the media this week to promote Double or Nothing. And of course, the Double or Nothing press call had very few questions about Double or Nothing. Questions surrounded a lot around Collision, ticket sales, CM Punk, and more. Khan also fielded questions about new NJPW Women's Strong Champion Willow Nightingale. As I'm sure you've heard by now, Willow defeated Mercedes Money to win the title. Mercedes reportedly broke her ankle during the match against Nightingale. Now that Willow is champion, Khan says he welcomes the opportunity to have the title defended in AEW. Of course, this also makes things interesting going into the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, which will be emanating from Toronto later this summer. Staying with AEW talent, Claudio Castagnoli will be making his New Japan debut. After all this time, you'd think it would have happened by now. But Castagnoli will be a part of the Dominion pay-per-view on Sunday, June the 4th, as he, Jon Moxley, and Shota Umino will take on Kazuchika Okada, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Tomohiro Ishii for the NEVER Openweight 6-Man Tag Titles. This announcement was made during the Best of the Super Juniors tournament when Umino made the challenge for the titles, revealing that his partners would be Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli. Our first World Heavyweight Champion this time around has been crowned, as Seth freaking Rollins took the title at WWE's Night of Champions. Seth and AJ Styles kicked off the show, but in the end, it was Rollins that walks away with the title. The other big surprise of the night was the end of Bianca Belair's championship reign. Asuka is your new WWE Raw Women's Champion, ending Belair's reign, which was declared the longest of the WWE modern era at 420 days. Well, if you're an action figure collector, AEW has just released a whole bunch of waves of their figures, including first-timers All Ego Ethan Page. Brandon Cutler will be getting his first figure, as will The Butcher and The Blade. Danhausen and Hook will be sold as a tag team pack. And there will be some ringside exclusives through Ringside Collectibles, including a bloodied up Wheeler Yuta and Sammy Guevara carrying two TNT Championship belts. The Acclaimed, Jamie Hayter, and several others are also getting their first figures since joining AEW. And while Impact Wrestling had their Under Siege event on Friday, Jordynne Grace is now a free agent, as her contract with Impact Wrestling has reportedly expired. Grace lost her title match against Deonna Purrazzo, the stipulation being that she could never face Purrazzo for the title again as long as Deonna had this reign. Now, this story is coming from Fightful, and they're reporting that Jordynne will be looking to work outside of wrestling for a while. Grace has been focusing on her bodybuilding career and has had success with her OnlyFans page.
McGuire on Wrestling.
You know, you never know who you're going to meet in this world of wrestling, and when you meet wrestling journalists and you get to know people. Obviously, you've had the connection with Dave Meltzer through the Wrestling Observer. He is in Vegas tonight for AEW's Double or Nothing. And then my pal Mike Sempervivi is doing some Mike Sempervivi things. I said, well, Mike, who else is really good out there to talk to? He says, well, have you tried Josh Nason? I said, I don't know Josh Nason. He said, well, I'll vouch for you. So reached out, and now joining us from the Wrestling Observer and Figure Four Weekly and new contributor to Sports Illustrated, SI.com, Josh Nason. Hello, sir.
Hey, glad to be here. You can see my elaborate set is not not as nice as yours, but yeah, we'll do what we can, but glad to be here. Glad for the invite.
And for those that are not watching on YouTube right now, I'm back in the Wrestle Wagon, who, if you remember me from last year, going all across the country and doing shows, like this thing actually was where we broke the story last year of Cody with the blown pec, was in this very trailer. I had Dave on your end, and he's like, Cody's hurt. And I was like, what? I'm going to Hell in a Cell tonight. Like, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. And so we broke that story here. And so you talk about elaborate sets, man. I'm in my camper. It's all good.
I love it.
I love your room, actually. I got to ask, is that Spider-Man painting? Is that yours or is that?
My elaborate works and all that stuff. No, that's actually something my daughter got me for Father's Day. Spider-Man is my favorite character growing up.
Nice.
And so they found that print somewhere along the way. I will say, though, for those watching on YouTube,
that's your artwork.
Yeah,
this is right there.
Yeah, this is mine right here. Yeah, my daughter did that as well. So yeah, she's a budding artist. So I love to display her work. But yeah, it's funny because you know I do my podcast on the Observer site, Josh Nason's Punch Out, and I don't do video yet.
Okay.
Yeah, despite being very good looking and handsome and so on, I don't do the video aspect yet. Part of it is because I'm pretty good with technology, but some I'm just concerned, and I don't know why I have to get this out of my head because so many people do it like yourself and make it look very easy. So I figure I can probably figure this out at some point. So I haven't really, I don't have the wrestling belt background that a lot of people do or like all this type of stuff. I have stuff I can frame and put up. So, maybe we'll get there someday.
I have some of that stuff, but yeah, right now it's checkerboard, whatever this stuff is. And don't worry about it, man. It's all about what we're talking about here. So I do want to get to that, but I want to get to know you a bit as well. For those that don't know you before, tell us about your history, how you got to be a part of maybe the Wrestling Observer Figure Four Network and where you stand as a fan these days. So I guess we'll start off with the obvious, and that is what brought you to the gig you're doing now?
Yeah. So I've been a sports writer almost my entire life. That includes being like in elementary school. I used to write about sports and stuff. I did work in junior high. I did my work 4 years for my school paper. Sorry, 3 years for my school paper in high school. Did the same thing in college. Spent 4 years there writing, and sports writing is just something I've always wanted to do. And then I started writing wrestling column back then. Wrestling has been part of my life since I was a little kid. And I just eventually kind of, you know, conflated the two and got out of watching wrestling for a while. I think as a lot of people do at some point. And when they ran through the 1990s. So there was a good stretch of time in which it was like, it was hard to watch, you know, kind of I didn't have a lot of access to anything other than WWF at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, it was just hard to watch. So fast forward, I really started getting into the UFC in 2005 after watching Raw. So I got back into writing. I'd taken a break for a while, got back in writing in 2005, started writing about the UFC, and then eventually kind of found my way to the Observer site through emailing Brian Alvarez and just kind of saying, hey, you and Conan, of all people, do a really good job talking about MMA. You should consider doing a show together. And he said, well, yeah, at the time I was writing for Fight Magazine, I think Bleacher Report at the time, Bloody Elbow, something like that. I've written for a few different sites back in the day. And he was just like, well, why don't you and I do a show from time to time? And I'm like, okay. So we started doing a show probably a couple times a month, you know, interviewing different people that I thought would be relevant to the pro wrestling public, you know, people they would know, kind of bigger names at the time. And then eventually I started doing editing stuff on the website. I started just contributing at night. At that point I was single, and after my day job, I'd come home and just open up the laptop and fix some of Dave's posts. You know, the stuff was, you know, Raw rating was A, and then the body of the post like 3.6. And I'm like, yeah, there should be more context here. So I kind of just started doing that. I worked myself into a job, and almost 12 years later, here I am. So we have a really robust staff, which is great. Great group of editors. Joe Currier, who's our lead editor, Brian Rose, Ethan Renner. And we have Ian Carey is doing some great work. We have all our great contributors and writers and podcasters and stuff. So to have this kind of be built up to where it is now and have to play any type of role, and it's been awesome. Really, really big thrill.
Well, and I'll just go ahead and thank you now for letting me leech off your credibility, as I do Dave, as I do Sempervivi, as I do Keith Elliott. Like, that's the thing with doing this show. Like, I always wanted to come into it as a fan, and where I was before, same thing. I'm not going to come in as an expert, even though I have kind of my own immense history in wrestling from a different angle. Mm-hmm. You know, now commentating for Bret Hart and his son's Dungeon Wrestling here in Calgary. And then I've been around indie wrestling and pro wrestling as long as I've been in broadcasting. And for me, it's always kind of been a passion. What keeps you interested today? What keeps you wanting to talk about it? I mean, you could say, well, the job, sure. But, you know, no job is worth doing unless you have some passion for it. So what are you really enjoying and keeping you invested in it today?
Well, there's a couple different aspects. One is I am involved with an indie promotion as well, Limitless Wrestling out of Maine, which you can watch on IWTV. It's a non-paid position or anything like that. It's a case I got to know the owner, Randy Carver, really well. I went to his my first Limitless show in November 2018. I had him on my podcast. It was so where I live, in the Seacoast in New Hampshire, in the States. And there was I had heard that there was this really great indie promotion about an hour away putting on shows. And I had never been to a show before. I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I should go check out a show. And I was fascinated because the names that Randy were getting were legit indie names and not necessarily stacking cards, you know, from top to bottom, like mm-hmm. some promoters do, where it's just like, you're like, how do they afford all this talent? You know what I mean? Yeah, because obviously the idea is to make money, and some of these you're kind of wondering like, how do they do that?
Oh, there's money marks everywhere that blow money on wrestling and do it gladly. So
exactly. So I was curious about it because it was a hybrid of local talent and indie talent, but then crowds were good and they were really well respected. So I had him on my podcast and I said, I'd love to come to a show. So he caught me for a show, went to it, and immediately I was like, this feels right. And so I kept going to shows as a fan, and then eventually an opportunity came available to co-host the Limitless Wrestling podcast, because I've been a guest a couple times. There was John Alba was a co-host as well. And he had said in storyline he was being suspended and there was a need to fill in, and so I said, well, I'd be happy to do that. And then, you know, well over 2 years later, 18 months, something like that, here we are. So I stay grounded there. I think with, you know, with everything else, there's always something going on. And I think that can be good and bad. You know, some days it's like, way too much news. And then there's times where there's, you know, not a lot. And it's kind of, you find the sweet spot of what's right. But it's a, you know, ever since AEW has got in the mix, it's a nice, vibrant, it's a vibrant news beat to cover, and it's never dull, you know, it's never dull. And that's what really keeps me. I'm just fascinated by it.
It is kind of interesting, for all that everybody talks about AEW and for all the discussion that comes up, it is almost becoming the tale of two companies now. And we'll get into that as we start going over some of the stories from this week. But I've found it incredibly fascinating. I've worked with them a few times and going to be working with them here in the prairies in Canada when they come with the Collision Tour coming up in just a bit. And we will talk about those, because Dave and I have gone extensively into those shows because I know all the arenas they're going to. I've worked in most of them. So seeing the numbers as they are, I kind of called it as it was happening. I was like, you know, you're coming to Prairie, Canada in the middle of summer when we get like 3 months of summer at most. So to do a Saturday show anywhere here, like, good luck, because there's lakes and mountains and other places to visit. But, you know, they've been doing what they can. So let's dive into it a bit here. But before we do, we did mention you're now a contributor to SI.com. Tell us about that story and how that came to be.
Yeah, pretty crazy. My dad, if he was still alive, I think would get a kick out of it, even though I don't really think he ever really understood what the internet was. But regardless, I mentioned Joe Currier earlier. He typically does. So we have an arrangement with SI. Some of our guys like Dave and Brian will do columns for them, like kind of wrap up things and so on and so forth. We share a CRM platform, kind of the back end of how our website works and so on. So we also, it's kind of like a content agreement and all those things. So we do preview columns as well. And Joseph Currier traditionally does the WWE ones, and he also does AEW ones. Obviously this weekend, people watching this will know, very busy wrestling weekend.
Yeah, there's a few things going on.
Yeah, and like Friday, even starting like Impact Under Siege, we kind of just got completely, you know, buried in a bit. And I think if people saw the photos afterwards, they'll probably go back, watch a show. That Steve Macklin PCO match and everything between was crazy. But so a lot
just,
of stuff
just when
out.
You think they can't do something new with a staple gun.
I know, right? I know. Don't give me any ideas where that staples could go into. So Night of Champions is on Saturday, and obviously Double or Nothing coming up on Sunday being today. And so he asked, he's like, would you be interested in doing this? I said, of course. So we just figured it out, and I started working on it, and here we are. And all of a sudden, Friday morning, I got the news that the column was up, and it was pretty cool to see. I didn't like even mention my wife or anyone, because I just want to see, make sure it was like real, you know?
Yeah.
One of those type of things. And it was pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff.
I've had those moments too. It's like, yeah, sure, you want me to do that, you know, and then they'll just, it just disappears. I get it.
Something happens. Yeah.
Well, there you go. I think we've established your credibility now for those that didn't believe before. And let's dive into it, man. We have Double or Nothing happening right after, in some cases, people are listening to this. I actually wanted to move this show to Monday, but I thought, we'll keep it on Sunday today just for funsies. But, you know, I might do some follow-up content here with Dave in the week, but this is a show that people are talking about for varying reasons. Some people are all on board with the four pillars in the main event. Others are questioning, are they all at the same level here? There has been also discussion of ticket sales, ticket giveaways, trying to paper the arena at this point. From your experience, not just with AEW, but maybe wrestling shows in Vegas in general, seeing numbers go around, like I've been to a ton of shows in Vegas, and you always see the video where it's like, oh, there's thousands of people in every show, you know, like David Copperfield has like, you know, 600 people per night or 1,000 people per night, and you go there and there's maybe 100 people in the crowd. Papering audiences doesn't seem that uncommon in Vegas, but does it seem uncommon for you for AEW with a major pay-per-view like this?
Well, so I actually add something about my background. So I, prior life, I worked for 6 years in pro hockey. seven seasons, actually, something like that, for in the AHL, both the Portland Pirates and Manchester Monarchs. Manchester Monarchs for the run from 2001-2002 season through 2004-2005, give or take.
Sure.
We were number one or number three in attendance, AHL attendance, and also North American attendance for minor leagues in the entire world. So I know a couple things about tickets and comps.
There you go.
Luckily, we didn't have to do a lot of them. So, you know, it's interesting. Arguments like this, you have to take a step back. And if you're talking with someone on social, it's always a case of like, are they a bad faith actor, right? Or there's someone that has a preset notion like AEW, the narrative of Tony Khan buys all the tickets. That's why they do sellouts and things like, you know, for All In and things like, you know, right. that narrative is it's completely bad faith. It just that just doesn't happen. Because if you think of all the people involved when it comes to putting an event on sale, buying tickets and so on, that would be a lot of people being quiet about a pretty big, I won't say scandal, but like a pretty big thing. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't happen. So when it comes to comps and things like that, look, you know, if you're a promoter and sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and realize that your event is not selling as well as it did, as you expected to. So then you could say, well, are we all of a sudden going to sell 5,000 tickets and walk up on Sunday? Probably not. So what are you going to do? You're going to try to get some comps out there. You're not going to flood the market, but you're going to find partnerships that make sense. You're going to find ways to get that out there. But also, you know, the thing with comps is they're free tickets. So the person giving to them, unless they really want to go, there's minimal value. So there's really not a lot of incentive for them to go, mm-hmm. especially if they don't really know what AEW is. Right. So it's just kind of like, it's the comp thing. It can work, but it can work for an audience that wants to go see a wrestling show. And again, with like boxing and things like that in Vegas, like if you've ever seen pay-per-views, often, and even UFCs, there's nobody there in the stands for prelims. And all of a sudden by the main event, everything's full, right?
Yeah.
With wrestling, you really have to hope that people are giving comps to kind of understand that it's not just for the main event. It's for the kind of the whole show. So yeah, I have no issue with them doing comps. I think, you know, it's not like they're going to flood the market with 5,000 comps and expect 5,000 people to show up. It's, you know, if they get, I'd say if they had 1,000 people show up with comps, I think that's a pretty good number. It's 1,000 more people in there, 1,000 more people that could buy merch, food, concessions, all those type of things. So usually it's done kind of in concert, no pun intended, with the arena folks as well.
Yeah.
You know, so because it's a win-win, but it kind of goes back to the original thing of why do those people not buy tickets to begin with? And it's a card that you put on.
Well, working with different wrestling promoters over the years on different levels too, I mean, the way to look at it at that point, especially when you're getting to show day, is these people weren't going to buy tickets anyways. Like mm-hmm. you were not going to get the dollar no matter what. So if you get that button a seat, maybe it's a ticket to the next show. Maybe it's general interest. Maybe you're getting that social media buzz now from people, you know, showing stories and photos of where you're from or where you're at and what they're seeing. And there is value, I think, to a promotion to put comps out like that. I think that sometimes us wrestling fans get too caught up in those narratives, though, those yes. false narratives where
100%.
The building yep. isn't doing great. And you know, there are legitimate reasons for some of these, which we'll talk about coming up with the rest of the Collision Tour here. But I think that's a great point to make, because I've worked in pro sports for years as well. And you see that it's like, they're not coming anyway. So if we get them in the building, A, the wrestlers feel great. B, the show looks fantastic. And C, maybe they come back, you know, and that's almost like yep. the lowest ancillary effect of this thing. So like you, I don't totally subscribe to the doom and gloom feeling of ticket sales not being great. That can, although, have a perceptive impact on the hardcore fans. It's like, well, if yes. nobody else is going, do I want to go?
Right.
And I'm wondering if that's maybe what's affecting. Like, I think the other argument has been that there isn't much on this card to draw. Like there isn't a big, even though you have the quote four pillars on there, do you think that's a fair argument? Do you think they're missing some star power, or do you think that this is this is par for the course. This is what they should expect because they're talking about building new stars.
Yeah, it's a mix of everything. One other thing on comps too is is promoters cannot, if you get a perception out there that fans don't have to buy tickets to be able to get comps a day of or going in, then you're screwed automatically. Because then even your hardcore fans are gonna be like, if I can save $60, $80, $100 or whatever it is, if I can save that money and just go and know I'm gonna be able to get it no matter what, that's not a good thing. Right. Yeah. So it's always kind of riding that line. When it comes to this card, I think it's a mix of a few different things. One is the reality that I think they're going to Vegas too much. Even though it's once a year, I think that unless it's really hot, like a really hot card, I think this could be kind of the reality of like, maybe it's good to go every couple of years. And you've heard this narrative before, or actually not even narrative, an idea really come up over the past, it feels like 6 months or so, that should they keep going to these same markets, since they only have essentially now five pay-per-views a year, does it make sense to keep going to the same market for, you know, two or three of them? We saw in Toronto, you know, with the Forbidden Tour 2, they're trying something different there, which is good. I think we're going to find out with All Out, assuming that is a go, which I believe it is, but for some reason, Tony Khan is being very coy on it, and I'm not sure why. Because people have to book travel plans for, you know, Labor Day weekend and things like that. I suspect we'll probably get some announcement about that tonight. And perhaps that's why it's being a little coy. But I think it's a card. It's the location. I think it's, again, the product. I watch AEW every week. I take in Dynamite and also Rampage. It doesn't feel like, in going through the pay-per-view, and I typically don't consider myself a cynical fan, just there's nothing on the show other than like the Anarchy in the Arena match, which makes me go, I can't wait to see how this finishes. And I think part of this too, and this is an issue that I know Dave Meltzer has mentioned before and others, their feuds take too long to culminate. So
really?
Yeah. Like for example, like
there's some people that'll say the opposite where it's like a feud will come out of nowhere and then be done too fast. But
yeah, I think some of the big ones, like, for example, the Swerve Strickland-Keith Lee thing.
Yes.
I mean, that feels it's been going on since 2018. you know? And they missed the peak. Other ones, you know, like the Four Pillars thing, I would have to go back to actually when it kind of started. Because I don't know kind of when, like, if it was December or January, but whenever they started kind of bringing this up, it just seems it's taken a very long time to get here. And that's one of the issues with running, you know, essentially quarterly pay-per-views is you have a little bit more time. The hope is that you have bigger matches on TV. And I think it's a hybrid of a lot of these different things. A lot of they don't feel like they have those big crossover stars, which leads in, of course, the CM Punk question. That's a big thing. If you go back a year ago to the same event, CM Punk was going for his first AEW world title. There was, we had the MJF Wardlow thing and the whole MJF thing over that last weekend that just added to that as well. But I mean, that MJF Wardlow feud, it's crazy, you know, kind of see where Wardlow is now. But I mean, people were popping huge when the build to that and then for that match itself. So it just feels like this is a lukewarm show and the numbers are showing. And we'll see what the pay-per-view numbers add up for. It's just, it doesn't feel like a must-see AEW pay-per-view. And really, the action is going to be great. I just, in terms of like the storylines and the thing that really keeps you connected, I'm not feeling it. And I think a lot of our fans are very similar as well.
And that's the thing with this show, Josh. I think you heard me on what I was doing before too. Like I really don't like to buy into the cynicism and I don't like to buy into being like the tagline for this show now is celebrate wrestling. And I believe that we as fans, if you're a true fan, you need to support what you like. You can talk about what you don't like and concerns you have, like what you're talking about here. I kind of feel the same way about this one. I'm not looking at this card as like, oh, there's a match that I have to see the results of that I can't just check out the Observer afterwards and find out the details. And that's not saying I'm not going to watch. It's just, you know, maybe we'll see. And this isn't a knock on the wrestlers either. Please don't take it as that, because I know if I buy this pay-per-view and I watch it minute to minute and end to end, wall to wall, it's going to be fantastic action-wise. I'm going to see a bunch of faces I know and like. It's just like you said, though, I don't feel like there's this big payoff one where I'm really going to get some satisfaction from a creative standpoint. So wrestling, great. And you can say, well, that's what I watch for is the wrestling. And I do. But yeah, there's that dramatic effect that we need to have on us. We need to experience that. And yeah. And it does feel kind of like maybe it is a little too much Vegas. Maybe it is a little too much of the same. I don't know what it is, but that kind of moves great into our next topic here. And that is the overall AEW ticket sales. There's this dichotomy where everyone in the UK is going to pack Wembley Stadium by the looks of things. It looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. The hype and experience, I talked to Andy Evans from the Squared Circle podcast over in the UK, and great guy. He's excited there. And he's been covering wrestling for 3 decades and he's going, they're going because they want to see AEW where they live and they're going to get to see it for the first time. After that, this kind of goes the old school mentality of just watching out for burning the territories. And it sounds like that's what you're kind of describing with a lot of the revisiting places like Chicago, Vegas, all these destinations where they've been already. They're coming to Canada for the launch of Collision. And we've talked a little bit on this show, Dave and I especially, because I know all the markets, I know all the buildings, I've worked in most of them. And doing a weekend tour in the summer, like that's something a lot of bands won't do in Canada because they just know. And the building buyers know. So when we're seeing some of these show numbers, not just for Canada, but there's other shows that have been released where ticket sales are like in the hundreds right now. And it's not great. What do you think is maybe costing them perception wise with this new show, with all this new ballyhoo and excitement around it? What do you think is costing them the hard ticket sale? Is it a case where they know comps are going to come out? Is it a case where there isn't enough star power announced with this? Do we need CM Punk? What do you think is slowing everything down here?
Well, I think it's the old Vince McMahon adage, or the, I can't remember who Dave attributed it to, but essentially the common sense thing is if you don't give people something that they want to see, they're not going to come out. And right now, I think a lot of it will be card driven. It could be Punk driven. I think we're going to find out. What I thought was interesting was and Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics pointed this out, and I believe probably assume WrestleTix did as well, is that after the Punk non-announcement, the announcement that the first ever Rebellion was going to be at the United Center, and of course you heard some CM Punk chants, we kind of know what the story is. The building didn't sell out. Ticket sales were like okay, but there was no like, you know, the first coming where that place sold out like that.
Yeah, the first dance, yeah.
Yeah,
and they sold out like 15,000 for that, or 13,000, or whatever. Like they had maximum capacity then. So
yeah, and there was nothing like that, and that's fascinating to me. Of is it too much Chicago? We talked about the markets. I mean, they're running Chicago that week after as well. I mean, Chicago is like saturated when it comes to this stuff, and it's, you know, I think that may become some as well. We'll kind of see. But what I find interesting, and I was kind of thinking about this as you were talking about the reality of running summer shows in Canada, concerts or anything like this. If you remember earlier this year, AEW brought on a touring company that is based in Canada. Shouldn't they know that as well? Did they give advice like maybe this isn't the right idea, or you know, so you kind of package all this into it. Is that Jeff Jarrett's here now? And he's not just a wrestler. He's, you know, is involved in doing a lot of these live events.
Yeah.
You just, in this touring company, of course, doing the house rule shows and things like that. I would be interested to know, and we'll probably never find out, or at least we won't until, you know, a long time from now when other things will be in our minds, is how much of this is tied together. Was this unexpected? Like, okay, we think we're going to do really well here, based on the advice that we're getting, and perhaps that change. I don't know. It's I'm kind of just fascinated by how all that kind of comes into play.
Well, and that's just it. You know, when AEW first launched, I was working with an organization out of Saskatoon's arena, And I knew the guy that run the place pretty well. And I was like, you got to get on this AEW thing. If you get on it now, and this was right when the company was just getting hot. I said, if you get on it now, believe it or not, I guarantee you, you will get people from across Canada flying into Saskatoon for the first AEW in Canada show. Because he told me they were showing up at pitch meetings, like for show buyers, right? And he said, he says, like, what's this AEW thing? And I was like, man, you should get on this now before anybody else does. And then sure enough, the Toronto thing happens. And great. I'm glad Toronto happened. I went to those shows as well. And I did Winnipeg. And that was great. But now, when you're announcing all these destinations in the middle of summer, like those were basically late summer or firsts. And then the Winnipeg show was still in like late winter, early spring. So there's not a lot for people to get out and do outside of that. Plus, it was the middle of the week. It was the perfect storm to do a show in Canada. Up here, and I don't know what it's like where you are, getting anything done on the weekend, man, unless it's part of the fair, like the seasonal fair going on for summer, state fair, I guess you'd call it down there. It's good luck. Like you're shooting in the wind and, you know, hoping you hit a target when it comes to selling tickets for a weekend in summer, because everybody's going to go to the lake or the cabin, or, you know, up here, there's even things like summer hockey and soccer and all these other weekend tournaments and things that go on.
Life.
Yeah. This weird thing, right? This thing that wrestling fans apparently don't have. We go out and do, you know? So when we look at those numbers, and again, the perception here in North America, do you think that these numbers being so low for Collision impacts their future sales in the States? Do you think fans are paying that close of attention, or do you think it's just a case of it's a Saturday?
That's a good question. I think I wonder, because we're so in the bubble, I wonder how people outside the bubble think. I really do.
Right.
It's hard to find them. It's hard to find with our subscribers. It's hard to find them on social. It's hard to find them. I don't know. I think it's a, I don't, given what I think I know about AEW fans, I don't think they are going to be dismayed if AEW is coming to their town and they're like, they're not in a good run or whatever like that. I think it's going to be the normal factors that affect them going: schedule, money, and maybe a little bit the card as well. And some of these markets, you know, I think they're doing better, you know, in the East Coast, where they're not, I mean, there was that loop last year where it felt like they were running the New York region like every other week, right? I mean, it was just like the same Northeastern loop. Obviously, it's where I live. And I was like, okay, this seems to be a little much. Cause again, for traveling and things like that, you know, once you travel once, you're not going to, unless you have, you know, a lot of funds, you're not going to just going to, you know, travel dynamite, like you're following the Grateful Dead or something like that back in the day. Right. It's just, you're going to go to one and it's going to be good. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be that compelling aspect. What's compelling them to go? And is it good enough at this point, where the company is 4 years in, something like that? Mm-hmm. If people have seen AEW once live at a Dynamite, is that enough to bring them back for a second time? What's different? What's new? What's going to get them in? And that's up for, you know, Tony Khan and AEW to really figure out. Is great. Like, for example, they're running the TD Garden in Boston coming up this July. It'd be the first time that they've run this venue, which is where the Bruins play and the Celtics play. And they ran the Aganis Arena before, which is a much smaller college hockey facility, and so on and so forth. They didn't really come close to selling out the last time they were here. And now they're running a venue nearly three times as big. So it's kind of like, why are they doing that? So do they have big plans, or is it just a strategy where they're running these bigger venues now for perception aspect? But if the perception is, if you're going there in a giant barn, so to speak, and it's like, oh, this 4,500 people here in a 17,000 seat arena, you don't feel like you're part of something. With small arenas, even if you have 4,500 in a 6,000 seat arena, you feel there's an environment. That's what I was always taught when I was working in sports, is you want create the environment, the place that
you need that buzz. You need the energy. Yeah.
The place to be and the place to be seen, right? You feel like you see, you know, it's just a scene. And that's something that they really have to figure out. And I don't know. I mean, I have faith that they can. I think we're going to start learning a lot when Collision starts, and the whole Punk thing, can they really get this thing hot again? And can they get the sides together, the Elite and Punk and all the contributors? Can they make a really hot angle that's going to carry this company for the next year? I would love to see them do it because I think it'd be the hottest thing in the sport. If they can do it, I don't know if they can, it's a shame. But if they get really desperate, if numbers aren't really picking up, I hope everyone can come together and do what's best for the business and the fans and get something that's really hot. I don't know how, but I hope it can happen.
It's a giant stack of cash on the table. That's what Huge. I've been saying for months, ever since this thing started. Like, you know, look at all these wrestlers on higher and lower levels and independents that don't like each other, but they know they're going to make a butt ton of money off of this thing. So they go out and do the show, right? I mean, the whole, I'm trying to think of like lesser examples. I brought up Matt Hardy and Edge in the past, and even Bret and Shawn was two guys that didn't like each other, but they're going to go out there and perform. And they're gonna almost compete against each other to see who can do the match better. And and then you get these great moments. But anyway, I digress because I could go on about that for a while, and we got other things to talk about here.
I mean, look, Bret Hart and Vince McMahon worked against each other.
Dude, exactly.
I mean,
And Brett's my boss now, so I haven't asked him about all this stuff before.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna share his insights here because that's his story to tell, but when I find out about it, I'm like, that makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. Like as soon as he says it, you're like, well, duh, why didn't I think of that? So anyway, let's move forward here. And it's funny how we talk about, you know, how the perceptions of an event are the place to be and the place to be seen. WWE United Champions yesterday in Saudi Arabia. Was that the place to be or the place to be seen? I don't know.
Depends on who's telling you to be there.
Well, that's just it, right? All the stars were out, and every star they showed in the crowd were members of the roster, which is fine. Don't get me wrong. It was cool to see, you know, faces like LA Knight get some camera time and be treated like a star. But were they really? I don't know. Going to those shows at first when the controversy happened, which I'm not negating at all for a second here. I mean, there's a ton of controversy around Saudi Arabia, and there's perceptions from two different cultures. I'm not saying one is right or the other, but in your opinion, just seeing how fans have reacted over the last few years, has the reaction to WWE going to Saudi softened at all? Like, do you think people are actually just caring about the wrestling more than where it is now? Or do you think that's still an underlying issue for a lot of people?
I don't think it is as much anymore. I just don't. I think with most controversies, most situations that people don't agree with, it comes to a point where unless something's changing, you're yelling at the clouds because nothing is going to change, right? It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it wrong. It is just the reality of the situation. So fans can choose to boycott, not watch if they don't want to. WWE clearly doesn't care because they're getting all this money and they've made this choice, the money, and we're going to put on the best shows we can for Saudi. And if people watch, they watch. Clearly it has not affected their bottom line or any type of dent in it. It is, it's a stain on kind of the reputation. Things get brought up, but it certainly doesn't seem to be driving away fans or anything like that. I think people that were from the outside were going to look down on wrestling anyway. This gives them more of a reason to do that. You know, I think the stuff that's covered like John Oliver's show and so on and so forth. It's just those people that are watching HBO, and I'm one of them, people watching Last Week Tonight. I don't think majority of them are wrestling fans anyway, you know? So I think that you're basically just solidifying their rationale. But it is these shows are going to be with us until I think probably the end of time, as long as the money is there.
Yeah.
And wrestling is full of bad people, you know, full of great people, but there are bad people and promoters and countries and different people that you're going to deal with. This happens at the highest echelons of business. I mean, Vince McMahon's back and look what he was accused of, and fans give him a standing ovation if he was to come out on Raw on Monday. Right. I mean, it is when we watch something like this, when we watch something like UFC, we watch MMA and everything, and there is a there's a deal that the devil, in a sense, all of us make. And we realize, and actually in sports in general,
there seems to be, for as many people who watch wrestling, know what it is. All right, let's face it. Going to a wrestling show is like going to a magic show, only with a lot more physicality. I always say you're going in there to be tricked. You're going in there to be entertained and buy into the fact that these people hate each other. They're competing for a championship, whatever you want to say. Sorry if I'm breaking news to some fans out there, but that's the way it is. But yeah. I don't think you can have any organization. And even in North America, all right, we can look at organizations like the NFL, for example. Not a great track record on a lot of things when it comes to how their players are handled. Like, I listened to the show. We had the host of it on James Petrogello, Crime and Sports. And when you hear about these organizations and some of the stuff they let their players or their, like fighters or whoever get away with or just brush off and do a fluff piece on. And, you could argue that right now in several organizations. What makes wrestling any different? And is it more I need to take a moral stand, or is it maybe because wrestling is something a lot of us have followed since childhood, is it maybe the loss of innocence that gives people such a negative stain on when somebody does something bad? And trust me, I'm not saying that any allegations weren't worth mentioning or following up on or shouldn't be disciplined. I want to make that clear right now. But what do you think it is that gives wrestling fans that extra sense of this is wrong and it's going to be wrong and I don't like it and you shouldn't like it because it's this wrong?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of narratives that they're following, social things like that. People want to get on board with causes. I think that happens with everything now. People, there's no such thing anymore as, I don't have an opinion on this, right? You can't say that, right?
Yeah.
Right? Or you just get, but yet so many people do, because that's just what a lot of people do in the country. Not everyone's on social, not everyone's on Twitter. And some people are kind of like, I want to understand the facts of this and kind of learn and so on and so forth. Some like the Saudi shows, it seems pretty obvious that, there's sports washing going on and all this. It's just a question of fans stateside. This big North American side, whatever you want to say, where they're kind of like, well, I'm okay with it, or I can't do anything about it. And my not watching this is not going to raise the red flag or be the straw that broke the camel's back. It just doesn't happen. Right.
Right.
And that's the thing with these huge money machines you're working against. It's there's nothing we can do about it. If nobody showed up, if nobody watched it and the Saudis like, wow, this is an embarrassment to us, then that's the only reason it would make change. But this is the thing, is there's no fighting these giant corporations and big machines. They're going to do what they want. It's just a question as fans of how much we want to contribute to that effort. And clearly, they don't release, the official viewing stats on Peacock or WWE Network. I just don't think there's that much of a negative enough for people to stop watching or absolve themselves of WWE altogether. And that's ultimately that's the reality of the situation.
And it goes both sides too. Like Sabu showed up on Dynamite and people were like, it's Sabu. And then this other side comes out. What about all this stuff he said? And again, the fact that we have to have discussions like this, and I have to put disclaimers on, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just presenting the story here, like you said, trying to present the facts.
Right.
The fact that we have to say, like, look, I'm not taking a side on this, and you have to hammer it down people's throats sometimes, like, I'm not taking a side, I mean it, I'm just trying to talk about the subject. That shows, I think, to the level of, if people are wanting to find something to be mad about, like you said, if people are looking to find a negative narrative and they're going to follow it anyways, that's what they're going to find and that's what they're going to get. I don't know Sabu from a hole in the ground. I've talked to his reps once about doing an interview on the show. That was about it. And it's like one of those things where, man, you can't talk to any. I had Tessa Blanchard on the show, and I used this last week. Talking to Keith Elliott Greenberg. I had Tessa Blanchard on the show last week, who I didn't know what I was getting when I was meeting in, or a couple weeks ago, I guess. I didn't know who I was getting. You hear all these stories and all the scuttlebutt and everything. And the person I met was the person I presented. And that was someone who said, look, I've had a run. I've learned a lot of lessons. I want to get back in here because I think I'm good at it. That's the story I'm going to tell. I'm not endorsing the story. But the thing is that if you say, like, if you say, I like watching WWE, I watched the show in Saudi, I watched Night of Champions, well, how can you support that? It's the same thing. It's the same WWE that's putting on Raw from Poughkeepsie or, you know, like wherever, like, or Poughkeepsie. It's like, it's the same thing. I can't help the fact, like, if they went to Russia tomorrow, which I don't think they're gonna, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's,
are you going to watch the show or not? If you choose not to, because it's in Russia, fine. That's your thing, but they're still going to do it. How does that make me a bad person if next week they're in Boise, Idaho?
Right. And you mentioned the NFL earlier, their issues there. Every form of entertainment that people take in, there is some darkness behind it that we just kind of close our eyes to, right? Because it's just the way it is. These people, you have the stories that come out, and there's, you know, you hear about abuse, you hear about alcoholism, bad things that happen that get covered up. And so many of us just kind of close our eyes or ears to it because that we don't want that to affect our level of entertainment. I mean, look at Conor McGregor. Since he has been out of the UFC, the only headlines that he's been in have been very negative. Mm-hmm. But when he comes back, he's going to sell out the T-Mobile, and people are going to be like clapping and doing the same thing.
John Jones,
the same thing. The domestic violence thing. I mean, that was, you hear that story, and anyone that has kids, I mean, you don't have to have kids to feel sympathetic.
No.
But his son having to go down to security, and like, it's just, I can't, as a father, and I have a six-year-old, I can't imagine the level of guilt and just weight I would feel for the rest of my life for having my kid be in the situation they had to come down to security and say that's something that his mom is in trouble. That is just, that's inconscionable. But when he came back, that was just a little sliver of the whole story. And people packed the arena to watch him, sold pay-per-views, promoted by Dana White, who I've said his issues. Again, it's these deals that we make with ourselves that no matter what, we're going to be like, okay, well, this is, everyone has their levels. But, you know, anyone that thinks that their entertainment, what they watch, no matter if it's TV, movies, music, anything like that, that there's not some sort of darkness somewhere behind it, they have their heads in the sand.
This is an amazing discussion, Josh. I want to thank you for being willing to take on all this. I honestly thought we were just going to talk about, so Bianca lost the belt, which we'll talk to you about in a second here. But, you know, that's why I like doing this about this show now, is that I don't have a lot of constraints and I can actually dive deeper into conversations like this. Yeah. And I didn't know your sports expertise, so now having that has been a real treat as well. So thank you for being a part of the show today. I think that if we just move forward and accept that even AEW, you know, Tony Khan coming out saying this is going to be a place for everybody and it's going to be, you know, this safe space. And for the most part, I agree. He tries his best, but there's some characters there that haven't, you know, exactly had their greatest moments in life either. It's all incumbent on the fan themselves. It's like, if you're going to forgive one thing, do you have to forgive it all or not? And that's the individual's choice. But I don't think that we can shape an entire moral conscience based on our own opinion, you know? So,
right. I mean, you mentioned AEW. I mean, Jeff Hardy, they brought Jeff Hardy back after another DUI and a very bad one in the morning in rush hour in Florida. Mm-hmm. And he's apparently done his rehab and you have to hope for the best. But I mean, also, I think it was Jay Uso, one of the Uso, but I believe it was Jay, has had his multiple issues.
Well, Jimmy's had the big one, but
Jimmy,
they both have. But, and that was the thing too. I mean, we used to tenderly, you know, kind of rib it a bit, just saying like, you know, it's when they legitimately couldn't get across the border. It's like, oh yeah, the Usos are going to be told to stay home when this pay-per-view comes to Canada. You know, it's like, yeah, they're being told to stay home by Paul Heyman. That's who's telling them, right?
Right. Sure. Yeah. And, so, but there's that's a conflict for me, but because I don't know. I that is I mean, again, you just hope that they're getting the help they need and that they're taking it seriously.
Yes.
You can kill someone doing that. And that's I have low tolerance for that, but you know, the bloodlines, this whole thing is one of the hottest angles. We'll see Jeff Hardy wrestle tonight.
That's one thing I'll take a stand on with you right now. And if you're saying this or not, I'm not going to put you in my boat, but I will say flat out, there is no damn reason to be driving impaired, period.
No,
period.
Not in this day and age.
No,
you know, not in any day and age, but especially in this with Uber and all, it's So I'm just hoping we never see headlines of them again, but the odds will say we probably will. Who knows, you know, but they're given an opportunity to compete.
I want to think the best for them as individuals, but yeah, I don't think that they need to be.
I haven't seen either do any anti-drunk driving campaigns or anything like that. You know, I don't know. This is my moral thing. I wish they would be a little bit more for it. They don't have to do it on TV, but you know, tell the future, the kids, whatever, be like, I screwed up.
I will say this. Jeff has in the past, but the problem is that, you know, there is a cycle to this too. And we're going to go into addiction talk here in a second, but it's, but you know what I mean? Like I'm not fully against blaming addicts for being addicts.
Yeah.
It's the actions around it that they enablers. Need to. Yeah, exactly. Enablers. That's a big thing too. Is the people around them, but it's also their consciousness of like, I need to accept that this is my problem and I need to own this so I can take care of it. Mm-hmm. And if I get out of control, I need to stop. And it's just, it's, I don't know. You're talking about people's wiring now. And I don't think that I'm qualified to do that, but
yeah,
I do hope for the best, but yeah, overall, I hope nobody gets hurt. Nobody.
Right.
So
right.
That's
an example of the deals that we make in our minds of what we're watching.
Exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to McGuire on Wrestling with Josh Nathan. We're going to talk about wrestling now.
Exactly.
40 minutes later or whatever. We started this conversation talking about the reactions of WWE and Saudi. Night of Champions did happen. If you're looking for updates on what's happening tonight with Double or Nothing, I might do a follow-up ancillary show here. Frankly, there's so many recap shows out there, though. John and Way over at Post Wrestling will have one for you lined up. And tons of others. You guys will have recaps on Wrestling Observer. Yep. You know, that's just it. There's tons out there to listen to. So maybe it will, maybe it won't. Maybe I'll just enjoy the show. What a radical concept.
Crazy.
Did watch Night of Champions, though. I watched the banger between Seth Rollins and AJ Styles. And Seth Rollins is officially now our first World Heavyweight Champion. There have been people that have been calling this from the start, saying he's obviously the guy. He's Triple H's guy. They did create some interesting doubt, especially the day before the show with the presser, where Rollins wasn't there because he had these movie commitments he was doing. And AJ Styles in the presser said, look it, I'm not worrying about Hollywood. I'm focused on here. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, dang, could they actually put it on AJ? So I bought into the story finally that minute. And that gave me that questionable doubt. Mm-hmm. Is Rollins going to be the guy? But Rollins is the guy now. He's the first new edition of the World Heavyweight Championship. We still do we know if they're still crediting the lineage to the old one? I don't think they are.
I doubt it. Yeah, I don't know officially, but the way they're it's very much the, you know, WWE scrubbed the past. Didn't happen, right?
Yeah.
So having all these long championship reigns to erase the past.
Right. So I guess first of all, was he the right choice in your mind? Seth Rollins the guy to lead off this title?
Yeah. My slow answer is kind of indicating what I think. I listen to a fantasy baseball podcast, and one, they talk about what they call oatmeal players that are consistent good, but it's like having oatmeal in the morning. It's fine.
Right.
You can add a couple things.
It does the job.
It does the job, but it's like, it's still oatmeal at the end of the day. And it's kind of what I feel about Rollins as champion. He's very popular, obviously, you know, he's, the fans sing the songs and do all that stuff. He's a great in-ring talent. I don't love this character. It's just a little bit too obnoxious, but that's just me. I think of, like, if you're going to kick off a new title, you know, is this the most interesting person to carry it? Or is this the person that you feel has kind of earned it? And that's kind of what I feel about this. Again, I think Cody should have beaten Roman Reigns at Mania. I'm on that boat with a lot of other people, I think.
That's a very unpopular theory. I've never heard that till just now.
I know. Breaking news. I think of like, is this the most interesting thing you could have done? Or is it just a case of, well, ratings are kind of going to be about the same. So let's go with the oatmeal choice versus something maybe more radical. Not that AJ Styles more radical. I'm thinking kind of like backing out for the whole tournament. Is there a more interesting story to tell? Could Gunther have been the guy to do it perhaps? I don't know. I think it's fine. It's an oatmeal choice and great in-ring talent and all that stuff. I just don't find it that interesting in terms of outside the, you know, the WWE kind of, you know, mainstream approach that they take. If that makes any sense.
Who do you think he's going to be feuding with first?
AJ probably.
Well, they're on different brands though. So they,
that's right.
So they can't do that now.
That's a good question.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, is this going to be, they're saying it's going to be, oh, it's going to be the active championship. Are there going to be feuds or is it going to be, oh God, is it going to be an open challenge belt?
I don't think so. I'm complete blank on who's kind of on the Raw roster now.
That's okay.
I'm trying to think of anyone.
I mean, you got Cody right there, and that could lead to, you know, the rekindling of Cody Rollins, but I don't think that's the way to go right now because he's doing stuff with Brock.
So the next Cody event, is. So July's Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
Okay. No one is coming to mind right now. That's probably not the best thing.
That's what I mean. That's exactly the question I'm asking here because, you know, you go through who's on Raw, who's on SmackDown, who are top leaders and who are the most interesting characters out there. Cody and Brock are tied together right now.
Yeah, I just champions.
Who else do you got?
Champions are made, and this kind of is what I talk about in the Double or Nothing preview column. Champions are made by their challengers and interesting pursuits. You mentioned kind of AJ kind of getting you there with the mention about the Hollywood thing, and that you said, is there a chance? And that's the thing when it comes to title matches that really makes them compelling is there a chance?
Yes.
And with the WWE title picture right now, in both sides, there's not that is there a chance because we've seen the is there a chance with Drew McIntyre. That's kind of gone by the wayside. We have the is there a chance with Sami Zayn. That went by the wayside. And then Cody at Mania. Those are your three big ones. You got to start that process all over again and really build up, you know, real title challengers and real moments, depending on when and if, you know, Cody ever does get his big moment. I don't feel that on the Raw side. I don't feel right now that there is and perhaps the Money in the Bank thing will start that. What is that? What's the build? What is there a chance guy or guys for that title? I don't feel. And that's what causes, you know, and they don't have to worry about this because of how they do their pay-per-views of streaming. They don't have to build to those apexes all the time other than like Mania. And yeah, the fact there's no immediate guy.
Okay. Let me go through some here that I think could be legit that are on their roster. Okay. He's still tied in with this Bloodline story. Perhaps I don't know what's going on with these tag team championships now, but you could say Kevin Owens could jump in there possibly for a stronger lead heel, maybe a Damian Priest. After that, I mean, he just had the match with Omos and maybe
you want a long Omos title challenge storyline. You want to have that go through the summer?
I want that for 10 years. I want that to be Dusty and Flair. But then the other one I'm thinking of, and you know, stop me if I'm wrong here, but maybe they go this way, Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah. Oatmeal.
You know, oatmeal.
Nothing's
jumping out to you here.
No, because again, they haven't done the run-up for the months that we've had to really kind of build towards whoever is going to be in this mix has been built up for 3 months and they're on the come up and they're on the surge. I'm trying to think if there's call ups that they've done that could be that. I don't think so right now. You know, that's an interesting challenge that they have, whether or not they actually care about fulfilling that challenge. I don't know. I don't feel like it, but again, it's going to be a challenge with this new split brand era that they're doing is they're going to make these title programs hot, or maybe they don't feel like they have to,
or maybe they trade LA Knight over.
There you go.
We were hearing all these reports that, you know, they're either with or against LA Knight right now. And there's fans that are clamoring to see it. I'm clamoring to see it. I've been clamoring to see it for a long time. But he's the only guy that I think if they actually figured out how to elevate to that level that could actually maybe make it interesting.
So that would be an example of a pivot, I'm assuming, right? That they probably don't have plans for LA Knight.
Yeah.
But because of this thing, this kind of buzz that's happening, that's what they should do. Pivot. And that's the best thing in wrestling. The worst thing is when you're just like, this is the plan. This is the only thing we're going to do. You can always, if you think this idea is great over here, you can always get back to it. But if you have something there, even if it's a 2-month program or something like that, just try to capitalize on it, you know, and have fun with it and realize that, again, you're playing with house money, literally. Just go for it.
Treat your own stars like you're treating a Logan Paul or anybody who are coming in. Make them a big deal. This is the one key. That's just let them follow the organic train. Stick to your plans, but maybe pivot, like you said. Josh, this has been fantastic. I was going to go into Asuka defeating Bianca Belair, but I've used so much of your time today. This has been a great show. You know, I was going to tag an interview onto this one. It's kind of evergreen, though, so I'm going to save it to next week, because, Josh, it's been a pleasure meeting you. I hope you'll come back sometime. And if we can ever do anything together down the road, feel free to hit me up, because, man, I just love your insight. I love your knowledge on this as well. And I appreciate you filling in for Dave this week. And keep me posted on everything that's going on. For people that want to follow you, let's do the whole spiel of where we can find Josh Nason and get more of this tremendous insight.
Sure. Yeah. At, of course, WrestlingObserver.com. You can get online subscriptions. You get YouTube subscriptions, all the good stuff. My Twitter is Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. And I do Josh Nason's Punch Out a couple times a month. It's a podcast you can get for free on the website and wherever. And I try to do a little bit different, like you were mentioning earlier. I don't really do recaps because there's so many out there at this point.
Yeah.
I try to talk to interesting people, people on the come up, people are kind of getting unappreciated, people I think might be next. And also topics like industry topics and stuff that we don't really hear a lot of discussion about. And Wrestling Observer is where you find me. Obviously, SI.com for the Double or Nothing preview. Hopefully I'll be doing more AEW stuff for them in the future. I think that could be kind of fun. And then also for those people that watch indie wrestling and you have IWTV, you can check out Limitless Wrestling. I'm not on the broadcast or anything like that, but I do the podcast, the Limitless Wrestling podcast. They put out a really good product. So if you happen to be in the Northeast, especially Maine, be sure to check them out as well. And yeah, that's about it. So I appreciate you having me. This is a lot of fun, and hopefully get a chance to do it again sometime.
You're a good guy, man. I really appreciate it too. I'm going to send you a code for I'll show you mine if you show me yours when it comes to our indie feds, put it that way. And sure, I'll send you a link to Dungeon Wrestling's last pay-per-view. We've got Nick Aldis as our champion right now. We've got a bunch of great talents. The Billington Bulldogs have come in. Mm-hmm. We've got the Bollywood boys, Harry Smith's there, or Davey Boy Smith Jr., or British Bulldog Jr., or whatever you want to call him this week.
Yes. He's worked in Limitless several times before.
And another great guy, right? So you know that for a fact. But yeah, I would love to find out more about Limitless. I'll send you Dungeon, and let's keep in touch, my man.
Sounds good. Appreciate it, Mike. Thank you.
So how's that for a guy? Josh Nason, never met him until today, but I got to say, wow. I love conversations like that where you can delve deep and you can have an intellectual conversation. We're not shooting off at the face. This is great. This sucks. And I hope you do too. I mean, don't get me wrong. We can have those conversations too if you want, but whatever you want to have. Hey, there's going to be a survey going up this week on the Facebook page. I'm going to be asking some questions. So if you follow McGuire on or at McGuire Show on any of the social media, that'll take you there. If you can do me a solid, give this show a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcasts, or give it a thumbs up, whatever you can do. That's awesome. To quote my friend James Petrighello from over at Crime and Sports and Small Town Murder, it's not for my ego. It's just in the hopes of continuing to do this show and, you know, help the business side of things go along here. I'm never going to charge you for this show. There's never going to be a paywall. It's just fun. And in this case, very interesting talk about wrestling. And I thank you so much, so much for being here. Until next week, as always, enjoy wrestling, celebrate wrestling. That's the tag of this show now moving forward. And by the way, let me know what you think of the logo. I did a new logo this week, but I was talking to a buddy of mine out in Toronto, and he's like, I kind of like the old one. It was kind of inviting and simple. And I was like, okay, all right. but he knows what the new one is too. So, yeah, your thoughts are always welcome. This is your show as much as it's mine. I just like to sit here this week, for example, in my camper and talk wrestling for you. Until next week, thank you for listening and letting me do what I do. Play safe, drive safe. Ah, happy seeing you.